From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Frederica Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Let's now join Hank and Frederica in their conversation.
You know, Hank, I was just reading an interview in the Wall Street Journal magazine with Ben Affleck, the actor, and I was surprised that in response to one of the questions, he said, a child needs two parents in the home. And they were saying, like, what are your goals? I want to be a good father. It is important that I be a good father to my children. It was surprising. I almost wondered how he got away with that, because you're not supposed to say that anymore. And it sounds like even without a church, even without a faith being part of it, he's just realized that a child really does need two parents. They need the example of female and male, both in the home. They need the strength of the father, the authority of the father, especially as a boy grows up. In single mother homes, too often when the boy gets to be 13 or 14, 15, he realizes he's bigger and stronger than his mom, and he doesn't have to behave anymore, doesn't have to obey her. And then that's when his life can begin to go very wrong. We need both a mother and a father, and that seems to be the way that God has arranged the human species to be, and that we continue to need each other all the way through the 50 years.
You're talking about Ben Affleck. I remember writing in one of my books about President Barack Obama, I think before he became president, was talking about the exact same thing, how important it was to have gender-differentiated parenting. Men and women bring complementary roles to the process, and you can't do without both roles. And he went into the statistics and so forth, and all of that was before, you know, the woke ideology just overwhelmed him.
Boy, yeah, what a shame. I mean, the truth is really obvious if you think about it even a little bit, and if you think about the examples you've known of various marriages and families, and it just takes a huge amount of willpower to ignore the obvious.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I said I wanted to get back to adoption, Frederica. Why is adoption so disparaged by abortion advocates? Why this war on adoption?
Yeah, the war on adoption. I think for one thing that it is obvious as soon as people think of it that it would be better than abortion. And so they want to put it down for that reason. They want to make it look like it isn't a good option. She still has to have the abortion because adoption just doesn't work. And I learned in the process of studying this, and I was so sad to hear, but sometimes black girls are told they want to adopt your baby because they want a slave, and this child will just grow up to be a servant in the home and serve the parents and the other siblings. It's lies like that that just poison people. The problem with adoption is that usually the woman doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to give up her child. And there are ways of having an open adoption where both the parents, the adoptive parents, are raising the child and the mother can come for visits from time to time. There are ways of preserving that if that's what she's intent on. But the reason the pro-choicers have to disparage it so much is, I think, exactly that, that it looks like there are alternatives to abortion, life-affirming alternatives to abortion, and I think they have a hard time with that.
When you wrote your book, and I don't know if things have changed, but you pointed out that there's official resistance to allowing black babies to be placed in white families, and that for many, many years, the National Association of Black Social Workers insisted that black children should be placed only with black families.
Yes, that's so difficult. And once again, it's not looking at what's best for the child. It's thinking that somehow the child is going to be mistreated in the home or couldn't be understood, or you know, the mother won't know how to do her daughter's hair or things like that. It's very insulting and very racist to look at it that way.
It is racist. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yes, yes. And, well, I'm so sorry to see the way our country is changing. I think we had accomplished an extraordinary thing in being able to reverse racism to the extent that we have. I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina in the 1960s. I remember what it was like. I love old movies. I see black people in movies from the 30s or 40s having roles that are demeaning and insulting, and they're there to laugh at. With all that whites in our country have done to harm and heartbreak black people, boy, we were reaching such a great denouement. We were approaching something like the kind of race blindedness that we need to have a truly successful America. And I'm just so regretful that that's being pulled to pieces now.
I hate to ask you to do this, but you do it in your book, and I do think it's important to discuss the very difficult issue of abortion procedure. What actually happens? I mean, so often you have this picture of a little blob in a uterus and we just get rid of that. But the actual procedure is draconian when you think about what's actually happening in the various D and C, D and E, D and X, and so forth. I think we need to discuss that, as difficult as it is.
As difficult as it is. And of course, the procedure that we've heard a lot about and seen illustrated is what pro-lifers call the partial birth abortion, where the baby is born feet first up to the head, and then the head is punctured and the brain sucked out. It's so horrifying. It's such a dreadful thing. And the alternative, the reason why they invented this partial birth abortion, was that the way they did it earlier was the doctor would reach into the womb with something like a pair of tongs and tear the limbs off the baby, one after another, pulling out an arm, pulling out another arm, pulling out a leg, until he'd gotten all the pieces out, and then crushing the skull so it could be pulled out as well. As horrible as that is, there was danger that the inside of the uterus might be scratched by the bones or by the tongs. So this, quote, partial birth method was supposed to be the answer. It'll make everything all right. The toll on doctors must be horrible. I hear every once in a while about abortion doctors and the nightmares they suffer and the horrible feelings they have about themselves. It's either that, if they have a grain of humanity left, or they become depraved in some way, like that awful doctor in Philadelphia who kept all his souvenirs in little bottles on the shelf. But that is the most extreme. That kind of abortion takes place only in the second half of pregnancy, or even the third trimester. The earlier way is not better. So if you have an early abortion at 6, 7, 8, 12 weeks, this is done by vacuuming the baby out of the womb. So the doctor has an implement with a very powerful vacuum force. I read somewhere it's 40 times the strength of a household vacuum cleaner. And the tube, of course, has to be smaller than the baby so that it will attach to the baby and suck it into the tube. And the doctor just keeps vacuuming blindly, vacuuming the inside of the uterus until all the pieces have flowed through the clear tube and he can see that he's gotten everything. If he doesn't get it all, it will cause an infection and possibly a very dangerous infection for the mother. So he's careful to vacuum it all out. That's not better, you know? That's still pretty horrifying. But the curtains are usually drawn around that procedure so people don't know how it's done. There is no good way to do this. It's an unnatural act in every respect, and so there's never going to be any humane way to kill the baby. It's always going to be hideous.
The point you just made with respect to the vacuum and the power of that suction, the imprint on a woman can be such that if later on in life she even hears the sound of a vacuum cleaner, it will be destructive to her.
Yes, yes, that's so true. This can be so nightmarish to her for the rest of her life. And many of the women I interviewed who had had an abortion and then later had children talked about how the process of going through labor and birthing the baby. She just felt like such a hypocrite. She felt like she wasn't worthy of being a mother. She thought that she ought to die in the process of birth. The self-hatred women can develop after an abortion can affect them during later pregnancies, later childbirth processes. When they hear a vacuum cleaner, there's so many ways that it can be triggered. There was an ad some years ago, a commercial on TV, that ended up with the words, "They promised you that you wouldn't have to hear a baby crying in the night." But they were wrong. Because women, they hear those cries and recall that even years after an abortion. It haunts them.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Frederica Matthews Green. For decades, debate has raged between pro-life and pro-choice advocates in the political realm. Should abortion remain legal or not? Is it a necessary evil or an evil so great that it must not be permitted? Which is more important, a woman's right to choose or a baby's right to life? But instead of pitting the baby's rights against the mother's, is there a way to help them both? Whichever side of the political battle you're on, you owe it to yourself to discover how our society can begin to offer troubled pregnant women some real choices. To receive your copy of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion by Frederica Matthews Green, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Hank Hanegraaff has dedicated his life to defending truth because truth matters. Yet an encounter with Christians in the underground Church of China left Hanegraaff contemplating his Christian experience. They were experiencing something beyond truth. They were experiencing life. Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God. Prepare to move past intellectually knowing about God to experientially knowing God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Frederica Matthews Green as they continue their conversation.
They promised you that you wouldn't have to hear a baby crying in the night, but they were wrong, because women hear those cries and recall that even years after an abortion. It haunts them.
Yeah, haunting. You know, I suppose that leads me into a question about the abortion industry in general. Is this just a crass money-making business?
I'm afraid that it is. I don't have firsthand knowledge about that. It would seem that it must be, because doctors have to be completely aware of what they're doing. Nurses have to be completely aware of what they're doing. It's not something that somebody hands them the vacuum tube and tells them what to do, and they don't understand the process or what they're up to at that moment. In order to numb the conscience so that that can be treated as something normal, I do wonder if there are people who just absolutely have no conscience, have lost the shreds of humanity. On the other hand, there has been a steady stream of people leaving the abortion industry, that they come to a point where it's just too much, where they can't avoid anymore. Knowing what they always have known, it becomes too insistent within them. And, of course, Abby Johnson at the Planned Parenthood in Texas wrote a whole book about it, and she has a project called, I think the name of it is something like Not One Left, but it's her business to talk to abortion providers and examine with them the feelings of ambivalence and horror inside, the frequency of nightmares, and help them decide they don't want to and they don't have to continue in that line of work.
What does it mean to be a victim of unisex sexuality?
To be a victim of unisex sexuality, we haven't quite seen that yet, but isn't it? It's the children who are in school right now, and we can't know exactly what it's going to mean. One thing that I think, though, I think it will mean rebellion, and because everybody listening to this should think back to what it was like to go through puberty and how insistent the desire for the opposite sex is for most of us, and how that's so ungovernable and unanswerable. It's such a vehemently powerful force inside human beings to make us want to mate so that we can breed. You know, it's just that simple if you think of humans as mammals. So if you try to teach children that really there's only one sex and it's all just decoration and what you choose to do with it, they may believe that fantasy when they're 5 or 8 or 12 years old, but by the time they're in their teens, everything in their body will be telling them the opposite. That there's something so delightful and so attractive that you just crave the opposite sex, and you're glad they're opposite. Vive la différence, as the French used to say.
I think something else that was striking in your book, Frederica, was talking about women wanting what men want. So if a man wants it, the woman must want it as well. And then you say, want what? Well, office politics and martini lunches and ulcers and early heart attacks. And you say, you know, I guess this has been a wonderland that women have been excluded from too long, and that in some sense, a paycheck is more fulfilling than an orgasm.
Yes, yes. That's one of the things I have in my book, that you just transmute entirely into a male persona, and then you can get ahead in the business world. Back in the earlier years of feminism, women wore suits. You know, they wore little pinstripe suits with skirts and bow tie instead of a man's tie. But it was so evident that we were trying to ape what men had, as if that was something that was so desirable, as if it was the only real life. And we didn't realize how truly anti-feminist that is, to be trying to, you know, exclude and shove to the side everything that women have always loved and enjoyed, the world of being home with your child and raising your child and providing. That's something that we had to sneer at, and the world that men had of their corner offices and so forth, somehow that was so desirable. It's like the opposite of feminism, you know? We had those paradoxes, and part of it also has to do with sexual desire. and women being taught to think that they want to have a lot of uncommitted relationships. I think women don't really want that. That's not naturally what women want. We want that commitment. We want to be adored, you know. I have marveled over the years in my 15 grandchildren, why is it that the girls want to be princesses? They want to be told how beautiful they are. They want to be decorated. All the Disney princess movies are about that. But the boys want to have adventures. They want to go out. They team up with other boys. They're not separated, one alone, this perfect princess. I think it has something to do with preparing hearts for what it will be like when it's time to have children, to nurture and care for them, and to boldly go out and do and achieve whatever's necessary to make a home for your wife and your child. It's a beautiful thing, and they'll never be able to stamp it out, but they sure can try.
There are so many wonderful aspects of your book. One of the things you talk about is the stupidity of not raising your own children, how a woman goes to work, and by the time she figures out what she pays for child care and for having someone else raise her child, she ends up discovering that there's not a lot of financial or psychological benefit that she has achieved from all of this. And in the process, someone else has actually had that benefit, and you were deprived of it.
It's so true. And what have you achieved except adding a lot of stress to your life? So it kind of backfires for women to put their children in daycare and then pursue a career. Not in every case, and especially it's more possible when we can work from home. I love to see dads work from home. My son David, the one with the 9 children, works from home. His wife does the homeschooling. They all work together. And being available like that, that's the human tradition. You know, you have your shop below your home, you know, you have an apartment up above the shop, or if you're a carpenter, your home is in the back, you're right there. So, yeah, this desire for what men supposedly have is not true, and it just backfires on women. The desire, that instinctive desire to have separate roles for boys and girls, for men and women, is such a deep part of our biology and our hormones. It can't be eradicated. I remember my little grandchildren, cousins, were playing once, and I asked, you know, oh, what are you guys playing? They had some little vehicles. They were rolling it back and forth. And the girl said, we're playing going to a wedding. And the boy said, we're playing riding in a truck. Can't eradicate it.
Why did you address in your book the issue of government welfare programs?
Oh, yes. You know, I came to the conclusion that this is something pregnancy care centers really emphasized, was we can help you make your way so that you qualify for welfare. They would be helping women fill out the forms and taking them to the office and putting it where it needed to be and encouraging them along every step of the way. From one perspective, you really see the need for that, because this is a way the woman can have food and can have lodging and all the things she needs in order to continue her life and raise her child. And on the other hand, I see that somebody said you get more of what you subsidize and less of what you tax. And if we subsidize and encourage ways for women to get along without men, men are going to seize that opportunity. They'll be in favor of that. But it undermines the family. And I think the long-term damage is pretty bad. So it's a shame that's something that pro-life centers fall into automatically, as well as often demonizing the father of the child. You know, they see a lot of bad guys, but they tend to see marriage as impossible because the guys are all irresponsible and they're no good and you probably have other girlfriends and so forth. I think we need to find a way to encourage marriage and encourage marriage to the worthy guys who are worth it and move away from encouraging welfare. We're in the middle of this situation where welfare is so essential, but I think the long-term damage is not small. It's pretty serious.
What were you driving at in the book when you made the comment that Mexican-American women that are born in Mexico have healthier babies than Mexican-American women who are born in the United States.
Yes, that was a startling but I think very significant statistic when I read it. It's that Mexican-American women who are in labor, you know, we'll envision it that way. If they give birth in Mexico, their health outcome and the outcome for the baby is better than if they give birth in America. And the reason is they don't have the same support system.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Frederica Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.